Tip today, in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Welcome back to Tip Today. Good, Ellie, thank you for that. Now, Justin on Texas says, Fran, can I let you know that there's cattle on the Tipperary Road out of Dundrum? Now, that's the way I came to work this morning, and it's bad enough with the roads being slippy in that area, but to add the idea that there's cattle on it as well, take great care in that area, won't you? I went along to Knockinrolly Resource Centre in Tipperary Town last week to meet up with the Active Arts cast of Silent Night, Precious Child. It's a contemporary adaptation of the Nativity story with a focus on how homelessness can affect community perception. So it really feeds into a lot of what we've been discussing this morning. The piece is written and composed by musician, composer and director of Active Arts, Mary Ronayne. And I first spoke to Mary, who introduced me to the performance.
Hi, Fran. Well, this is Active Arts, and I came in there to you last year and told you all about Active Arts and how to bring creativity into a community. They're creating their own work, and the group I have here tonight are the Active Arts Adult Group and the Active Arts Children's Group. And we were working on what we would do for the Christmas season, and I had just written a piece called The Baby in the Barn. And The Baby in the Barn is really an adaptation, a modern-day nativity story. But what we're trying to get across in the piece is that the nativity is going on all around us. We're bombarded with commercial ads and lighting and the look of affluence all around us, but we're also, you know, homelessness and migration is a huge part of our society at the moment. And The Baby in the Barn, we have nativities going on every day in Ireland at the moment. And it's a bit frustrating when the homeless and people that are migrating are no longer really referred to as people, that they're referred to as homeless and they're referred to as migrants. And they're actually people just like Mary and Joseph. Well, I've called them Joseph and Miriam in this. Yes. But I think for the younger members of the group, it really brings the story of the nativity and the reality of life and society and the struggles that some people face. And I think it's very important, you know, in an arts group that we are mindful of society as it is today.
Very good. Now, also included in what we're going to play and what we're going to hear is a piece from Betty Lynch. This is separate to your own work.
This is absolutely separate from my own work. Betty is a native of Tipperary and a very well-respected musician, choral director, and author as well. And Betty works with this group. A lot of the members here are also members of the Circle of Friends Choir.
Yes.
And Betty spoke her reflection at the Circle of Friends Mass last week, and I invited her to come along because I mean she's a national treasure in Tipperary, and her work is very important. And this is a Christmas piece that she wrote, so she very, very kindly agreed to come along and add to our creative adventure as well.
Very good indeed. So I'll tell you what, let's go in and have a listen.
Okay.
Not so very long ago, and not so very far away from this place, a young couple called Joe and Miriam, who came from a beautiful land, a place where they grew up, went to school, surrounded by their families and friends, just like us all, arrived on our shores after a very long and difficult journey.
Before they left the beautiful land where they were born, they enjoyed an energetic, happy childhood. They grew up quickly, met and fell in love, and life was good. Loved dearly by their families, friends, they also enjoyed the warmth and protection of a close community. But soon war came to this beautiful land, and suddenly their home became a dark and dangerous place to live.
Every day more bombs fell, and many soldiers came to overwhelm their lives and village, killing and injuring many people in their once quiet and peaceful community. War brought terrible changes to their happy lives. Joe and Miriam loved each other dearly, and they loved the share they shared was very strong. Soon they would become parents, and they worried desperately for the safety of their new baby, whose birth was very near.
Joe and Miriam decided it was not safe to remain in their own land and must travel far away to another country to find peace and safety for themselves and their new baby. It was a very difficult decision to leave their home and families, but they were brave and knew that very soon they would have to say goodbye to their family, friends, home and community with whom they grew up.
They set out in their car very early one morning and drove for many weeks, travelling on back roads to avoid the dangers of war, stopping only to eat and sleep. They had seen how many good people in their homeland had been killed or injured without explanation.
As they reached new borders, checkpoints and lands far from home, they began to run out of money. They found it hard to afford fuel for their car, accommodation and food. Eventually, they decided to leave their car at the next border and travel on by train and bus. They kept only their essential luggage and personal belongings, such as clothes, toothbrushes, passports, family photos, and money.
As they travelled through each new border and checkpoint, they began to look more and more tired, untidy, and worn out. Homelessness and travel had marked their once fresh, clean appearance badly, causing border control employees and the people they met to look at them with more and more disapproving, judgmental eyes. Checkpoint officials spoke to them disrespectfully, as if their feelings no longer mattered anymore. This hurt them deeply, but they silently endured it without complaint, because they knew that complaining or objecting would only make their situation worse.
With little money left, they often slept in bus shelters and train stations. Joe worried constantly that this was not good for Miriam, so close to giving birth to their baby. One night, it was so cold they shivered and cried together all night. Miriam was, by now, far too tired to walk any further in search of better shelter.
In a field close to the road, Joe saw a small donkey trapped in the bushes and went to free the little animal. He lifted Miriam onto the donkey's back to sit and rest as they walked on. The wind howled and darkness fell. They knocked on many doors, but the owners just frowned on the dirty, ragged couple before them and slammed their doors, fearing that they were robbers. Times were hard everywhere during the global recession of a few years earlier. People were still cautious and had very little to share. Strangers were very low on the list of people to help or trust at this time, even in a land that looked so wealthy in comparison to the land that Joe and Miriam has left behind.
When they reached the last house on the road, an old man answered the door. He told them to go away because he had nothing for them. He had no extra food or rooms to rent them. They quietly walked away crying, cold and running out of hope. As they walked away, the old man noticed how close the young woman was to giving birth and felt very sorry for the two strangers.
He told them he had a little barn across the field and it was dry but had no electricity or water to cook and wash. But it had a little wood-burning stove the shepherds use on cold nights. They were so grateful to get out of the cold for the night and thanked him. But he quickly reminded them that they would have to move on next day because he didn't trust strangers.
When they reached the small barn, Joe fixed some straw for them to rest on. It was comfortable and dry, and it felt like a palace to them compared with sleeping on the street. The winter frost sparkled on the ground and they smiled as it reminded them of home and the Christmas lights they once lit in their garden every year. They looked out onto the fields. Even the frost-covered leafless winter trees sparkled like Christmas trees in moonlit, clear, star-filled winter skies. Despite having nothing, they knew they had everything they needed at that moment, being surrounded by the simple beauty of nature's gifts. This calmed their worried hearts.
They heard a noise at the back of the barn, and Joe quickly went to see what it was. It was only some sheep resting in a pen, having wandered in for shelter from the cold. Joe also found the small wood-burning stove and lit a cosy fire to warm Miriam as their baby arrived. The sheep wandered over to warm themselves by the fire too, and soon after their baby boy arrived safe, well and warm in the little barn, so far from their home and family. But despite this, the barn was filled with all the love this new baby brought. A new family and new hope was also born on that night.
Soon after their baby was born, some farmers arrived at the barn door, searching for their lost sheep. They had seen the light coming from the stove fire. When they saw the young couple and their new baby, they went out to their jeep, where they had some blankets, flasks of tea and sandwiches, and brought them in to share with Joe, Miriam and the baby.
One of the young farmers was the son of a man who owned the land and went to talk to him about helping the couple and their new baby. The farm owner's brother was one of the three richest men in the land, and these three men had travelled to the area for the winter holiday season. The young farmer brought them to visit the couple and the new baby in the barn. When they listened and heard the full story of the young couple's journey from abroad, it shocked them deeply, and they were humbled to see how true love had kept them strong and safe and together, despite the hardships they had faced. This beautiful new baby was the reason they walked away from the destruction of war, leaving everything they knew and loved behind to find a better life and a safer life in a new land. Very quickly, they were welcomed into their new community, found a home and work, and their child grew up to become a much loved and respected member of their new community.
Bethlehem, O Bethlehem, far, far, far away, the place where baby Jesus was born on Christmas Day. He was the great Messiah, the longed for, hoped for one, who would redeem and save the world from evil's grip near one. Laid in a manger, a trough to feed the sheep, this was the little cradle where the Son of God did sleep. Shepherds came and worshipped, so did the three wise men. Imagine if that stable was nearby in Arlo's Glen. Our gifts we'd bring with love and joy, just as we do tonight, then sing and pray sweet lullabies until the morning light dawns on rugged Galtimore, where angel choirs would sing, glory to the Son of God, the infant Christ our King. Now we know that Bethlehem is really everywhere, beneath the stars that speak of hope and lift the heart's despair. We need the Star of Bethlehem to light our path today, the path to peace and tolerance. For that, we sing and pray.
Till morning light.
the little people of Active Arts there, and we heard the more mature members indeed of Active Arts as well, with their contemporary adaptation of the Nativity. And I recorded that, as I said, last week in Knockanrolly Resource Centre in Tipperary Town, and I got a great welcome there, and it was lovely to meet everybody involved, and particularly congratulations to Mary Ronayne, who is the composer and indeed who wrote the adaptation of the Nativity as well. So well done to everybody involved in that. 1800 938 007. You can text on 083 311 3311. It's 10:21 right now.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
Welcome back to Tip Today. Now, you will have heard Paul Lafford contribute to the program quite a bit, in fact, over the last few months, and I'm delighted to say that he's with me live in studio today, mainly because he has decided to place himself here in Tip FM for some media experience, I suppose, for your sins and all of that, Paul. But you're very welcome to Tip FM. How
Thanks
are you?
Thanks very much, friend. Thanks for having me in. It's a pure thrill to be here this morning.
Well, I'm delighted you think so. Tell me about you, though, and tell me about this almost obsession with media at this stage. You changed tack along the way, and you saw the delights of blogging and media and all of that, and it's something you wanted to get into.
Yeah. As we were just saying there a while ago, friend, this happened to me when I was in my 50s. Most people decide, I think they plan their career when they're 18 or 20, and I decided to wait until I was 50, and I had a midlife crisis, Fran. But no, seriously, I found myself, Fran, and I feel it's a bit disingenuous, really, in a way. I found myself in a job, Fran, that I hated. And that's no reflection on my employer. It was a fine job, best of conditions, good money. I wouldn't for a moment speak badly about it, but it just wasn't for me. I was very, very lucky, I suppose, in a way that I had stuff like my mortgage off my back.
Mm.
So I think once your mortgage is gone, you have a fair chance. It kind of opens a lot of doors. So I found myself, as I said, with that gone, but going to work every morning in the middle of the worst recession, I suppose, in living memory, people losing their jobs left, right and centre, and I'm aside in a job that I hate. So over a period of time, I decided I just have to leave it. So again, I had people saying to me, like, you're gone on the head. Like, I mean, you have a job. And I decided to leave it. Now, right, as a musician, if that's what you call it, I had a bit of a safety net underneath. So, like, that's one thing I learned years ago when I learned to play the guitar. If you can play a musical instrument, you'll never starve.
Yeah, for sure.
You won't be wealthy from it, but you'll make a few quid.
You'll get by,
so,
yeah.
I had that. So it's a bit like maybe an electrician or a plumber, excuse me, having some kind of a skill. I had that, so I was lucky enough. So then I started doing small opinion pieces on Facebook and on Twitter and all that, and they started to get a small bit of attention. And indeed yourself, you've given me a fair platform from time to time to come in here and speak as well. And out of the blue, here I am at 50 years of age, finding, God, this is what I want to do. So I spotted, there was an ad in Care, in the business centre in ETB, that they were doing an e-commerce and administration course. So I went down and I met Helen and Karen and I signed up for it. And that was last April. And I have to safely say, Fran, I think it's possibly the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Isn't that incredible?
And I'm inside in the room, Fran, and as I was saying to people recently, I can't understand there should be a queue of people from the business centre in Care down to the castle and back, of people queuing up for this opportunity. Because we hear a lot nowadays of people that there's no hope, my future is bleak, this is wrong, that's wrong. But every now and again, maybe if people were just to have just maybe go in, for instance, go into your social welfare office. I've been always very, very lucky. I've always had a job.
Mm.
I didn't even know there was a social welfare office in Care. And I went down there and I met Leo and the lads in there and sat down. And all of a sudden, all these options were given to me. And I was there, yeah, but listen, lads, I left a job.
Mm.
You know, I had left of my own decision. But the opportunities that are there for upskilling for a person, I just couldn't believe.
With no cost?
No, you see, this is the thing. Like, the likes of the ETB, this is more or less fully funded by government. I don't understand.
So you're surprised why an awful lot more people don't take these options?
You see, I think people don't know that they're there, Fran. I didn't know they were there. I was actually walking past the business centre in Kerr one day and spotted the small little sign that they had up.
Mm.
And I just went and I spoke more about it and I got more information about it. And I found myself inside in a room with predominantly younger people. I'm the elder lemon. And yet, I'm the only person that I have a huge thing about ageism, as we just spoke about there a while ago. I'm very, very conscious of my age because I feel about 20, but I'm 52. And at 52 years of age, I suppose I should be kind of just sitting back and putting the feet up, watching the telly and taking it easy. But it's a strange feeling that you don't want to do that.
Mm.
You still want to keep going. Like, I mean, I cycle a bike. You're always looking for a bigger hill to climb. Like, and people are saying, like, I mean, you go out in the really cold weather and people are saying he needs his head examined. But a constant challenge, challenging yourself. And here I am at 50 years of age doing that. But I found myself in this course with ETB. And that's what has me here in Tip FM this morning, like, as part of the experience part of it. And when I contacted Trudy a few weeks ago and they agreed, to take me in here. I mean, you'd probably have heard the shouting here in Clonmel, like when I was talking to her and she said, like, you know, yeah, we'd love to have you in for a couple of weeks. I mean, it's just like a dream come true for somebody like me.
Isn't
when you have
fantastic.
An interest in media.
Yeah.
And as I said, like, I mean, I see some of the lads over, like, I mean, we've all got different areas. I mean, I see young kids, as I call them, they're planning now, we say, what they want to do. And I feel the same way.
Mm.
But, like, I'm twice their age. But this opportunity has come, and, for instance, I've learned to build a website from a blank page, paulaffer.com. There's a plug. But I built that totally myself. And the day I published it and the day it went on live in my own little bit of space on the interweb was mine. That's my little spot. And I did it myself. And it's like a songwriter. You know, if a songwriter sits down and they write a song.
Mm.
And if I'm sitting down writing a blog, like I did a blog yesterday, I have a huge thing about our Irishness and our diminishing Irishness. I have this thing and how we've turned to chat radio or where we've turned to social media to give out about stupid things. I have a huge bee in my bonnet about that. I mean, you sit down, you compose something, and then if it's getting a few reads or if somebody shares it, and it's just like that songwriter, and it's just...
Mm.
It's just a fantastic feeling. And
I also get from you that when you do blog something, you enjoy the cut and thrust of it as much as you do the praise. Like, you like it when people disagree with you.
Absolutely. Oh, God, yeah. Plenty of them do, Fran.
Yeah.
The only thing, I draw the line at abuse.
Yeah,
I don't
do
abuse. I don't do cranks, and there's enough of them out there as well.
Yeah, but conversation and disagreement and argument and is fine as far as you're concerned.
I think if you look at the national newspapers every day, like, and we've got correspondents and we've got political people who can say their piece or whatever it is, I think social media gives the likes of us people our chance to be, we say, like Michael Clifford or Fintan O'Toole or whatever it is. It gives us our opportunity to say our piece.
And up until that, I mean, had you written to newspapers? Had you, had you written in general? Had you written at all?
No.
Not at all?
No, it started, and often Caroline, my wife at home, when they see the laptop coming out, even the dog dies for cover when they see the laptop coming out, say, oh no, do you think he'd shut up? But no, but I've always enjoyed, and I think it's an Irish thing, Fran, when people go down to the pub or whatever, go into a restaurant, we always have an opinion on stuff and the chat.
Mm.
And it's something that, I was playing a gig in Yall the other night, and it was a pretty rough night now, Saturday night, but I was looking around me. Now, it probably said more about me as a musician, the amount of people on their phones, looking at Facebook and all that, but even couples.
Yeah.
Sitting down inside, having a drink or whatever it is, looking into their phones, and that bit of conversation, I think, that's synonymous with Irishness is gone. And it's something I'm very, very conscious about, because we all love the chat and the crack. It might be old Ribbon or Blackarden.
To be devil's advocate on it, though, has the chat just moved from the one-to-one conversation or the conversation at the bar to people like yourself, though, blogging and giving opinion on social media? Is that a consideration?
It has, in a way, because it kind of gives you more time to think. Mm. Like, I've always said, like, for instance, if you're writing something, I always do it up in Microsoft Word first and copy it and paste it in, because you've got undo buttons.
Mm.
If you're talking in a pub or talking to you here in the radio this morning, there's no undo button. So if you say something stupid, you can't go back. If it's said, it's gone
out.
Oh,
don't I know. Don't I know.
And it's something that I'm very mindful of. Has it gone on? I think it has, but it has also opened up a place where people can start shouting and people are nearly afraid in case they'll offend somebody nowadays. There's a lot of people take offence to things.
Mm.
Like, I mean, ask Adam Bolton from Sky News, like, I mean, in the last week, where people got offended, or Saoirse Ronan, who managed to upset the place. And personally, I had never heard of the girl, like, you know, I've heard of her now. But the conversation has come to blogging and onto social media, but a lot of people are afraid to say anything. I was talking to a girl one day and she said, I'd be afraid to say anything on Facebook in case what people think.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. Would you urge people of a certain age out there, if they do have dreams about doing something, to go for it? Is that what you would say?
Yeah. You might have to make changes. Like, I mean, we made a lot of changes in our lives. Now, as I said, we were very, very lucky to get the mortgage off our back. Once these things are gone, it does open. And I was very, very lucky, so I have to say that first. But I'd be very, very mindful, Fran. This morning was a really, really horrible cold morning on the road. How many people went out to work this morning at 5 o'clock or earlier into a job they hate?
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, I was in a house one day and it, beautiful house, absolutely beautiful. I mean, our entire house would probably fit in this house, in the entrance hall in this house. And I said to the woman, I don't know her very well, and I said, my God, your house is fabulous. And she said, yeah, she said, but it comes at a cost. And she told me that her husband leaves the house on a Sunday, goes to Dublin, flies to London Monday morning, comes back Friday, sees his children Saturday, he's gone again Sunday.
Now,
is that a life?
Well, you see, this is the point about it, you know. One of our listeners on to say, listening to Paul, I would love to know, for instance, how to use a computer just for me. I was wondering, is it open to somebody like me at this stage? I'm 71, just for my own satisfaction. That's in from Betty.
It most certainly is, Betty. I would say look up your look up ETB on the Yellow Pages, or indeed go down to your local social welfare office and they will have every bit of information that you need. There's ECDL courses, for instance, going on in where I'm coming from, in Cairn, the business centre, every single week. And a lot of the schools, for instance, do them as well. So, Betty, don't just think about it, Betty. I would say do it. And you mentioned the age. That's the biggest problem I think we have, that we're the people that mention the age.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? All right, before I let you go, though, the latest blog was about you coming across the boy races
at the V
last night, was it?
Saturday night. Yeah, I was playing music down in
York. You were crossover it.
I was. Well, it's not that I'm crossover. I suppose I was in a way, Fran, because I was coming up over the V, and it was a horrible night. And I was just looking. I just wanted to
get home. Driving or cycling? You were driving?
I was driving, yeah. Right, I was playing music down in York. Yeah. And I came up over the V, and just up at near the lay-by at the top, there must have been 50 or 60 cars. And look, again, I don't really mind what these people do. If they want to go out and have a bit of fun, whatever it is, like we were all kids, we're all young lads. But I kind of draw the line, Fran, at fellas burning the you-know-what out of their tyres and all that and holding up the whole place.
50 or 60 of them?
Possibly more.
Wow.
Yeah, and the thing, now, it was pouring rain, like, that's what got me really on top of it. But, like, I had to stop. It took me about 10 minutes to get past because these guys burning the tyres, screaming the engines out of the cars. And, like, the rules of the road apply to us all. Like, I mean, no, admittedly, right, I don't drink and drive. I don't drink, so I keep my car taxed and insured. And we all have to, like, coming in the road this morning, the traffic corps were stopping. I had nothing to worry about. I stopped and the guard did his thing and I hit off myself. But the rules of the road apply to every one of us. And if these guys want to burn the tyres of their car, scream in engines, act in the Egypt, whatever, that's the best of luck to them.
Right.
But I just think that I was a bit annoyed, yeah, and it did, and it created a small little bit of a storm.
It created quite a bit of a storm on Facebook last night. Actually, Patty says to us, we were all boy racers when we were younger, but we get sense, however, it would be better to have a dedicated track to make it safer for these young people. I'm not sure were we boy racers to that particular degree, though.
I think, you know, I had a Fiat 127, Patty, and I'll tell you one thing, it wouldn't go up a hill. And if it started in the morning, you were lucky. So.
Yeah, well, I had an Escort with a Mark II Cortina engine in it, and I won't even go into what happened to that car. But anyway, Paul, listen, I wish you well, and we're delighted to have you for a couple of weeks.
Thanks very much indeed.
And I'm sure we'll be hearing from you over the course of that couple of weeks as well.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Members of the Nina Municipal District are calling on the Minister for the Environment to examine the legislation around the collection of waste in rural areas. Councillors from the area are raising the issue at Tipperary County Council's December meeting today. Now, it comes as the quantity of waste generated by Ireland is rising every year. And, of course, we're moving towards that pay-by-weight situation as well. The amount of waste sent to landfill rose by more than 110,000 tonnes last year, which is about 40% of an increase there. A waste reduction initiative in Cashel is trying to combat this problem, and our Out and About reporter Amy Ryan went to find out more.
So currently there's about a million tonnes of food waste in Ireland each year, so that's enough to fill Croke Park 2.5 times, to put it into perspective. That's a lot of waste, you know. The average household throws away about €700 worth of food each year.
That's Derry O'Donnell, project manager at Zero Waste Cashel. He invited me to their office in Cashel Town to tell me about the initiative aimed at reducing waste.
Zero Waste Cashel, it's an initiative heading towards zero waste. So it's an initiative of VICE, which is Voice of Irish Concern for the Environment. And it's funded by the EPA with support from the Southern Region Waste Management Office, Tipperary County Council, a number of other agencies like Green Business and Stop Food Waste, etc., you know. So it's just aiming to reduce the waste coming out of Cashel by 25% over the course of the project.
We've been told for a long time that recycling is a necessity. I asked the public whether they recycle and if they think it's important.
I do recycle, and I think it's very, very important. And I think we all should look on it as an important issue for Mother Earth. There's more of us around than there ever has been, and there's more shopping being done, and there is more waste. And I think it's essential, not just important, it's actually essential.
I do, and I think it's important because we have too much of it and we need to do something with it instead of just dumping it everywhere, you know, that kind of way, because if we don't, we'll just be living in it.
I do recycle, and I do think it's important because I have grandchildren and I'm considering the planet for them later down the line. We recycle absolutely everything we can. The one thing I would say is particularly with the supermarkets, because I shop quite a lot for veg in the supermarket, they do a lot of unnecessary packaging, in my opinion. So I'd love to see something done about that. Just buying straight up and putting them into a basket instead of the other way, as it is at the minute.
We've actually been recycling for 2 decades, but bin companies are threatening to impose bin charges because they say we aren't segregating our waste properly. Are they giving the public clear guidelines? Do you ever get confused about what you can and can't put into your recycling bin?
No, not really. I have a fair idea. Anything that's paper or plastic goes in the one bag, and that's what I dispose of it that way.
Oh, I do, yeah. I do from time to time. The head is not too good. The older you get, the more. And then when you have a crowd of young lads at home driving you cracked, it's hard to know which I do get mixed up with them, yeah.
No. Never, I know it all, yes, because I've been doing it for so long.
I can't figure out where you put the ashes out of the fire. You can't put it into the red bin, and you can't put it into the brown, I think, you know? So you're vice versa. You can't put in where the garden waste is going. And the other is for, we'd say, domestic waste. So where did the ashes fit in?
I wasn't confused until recently. I saw a programme on television there quite recently, and I never knew that your takeaway coffee cup, I would have put it into the dry recyclables. It can't go in. Seemingly, if something is cardboard, as you would imagine the coffee cup is, it is lined with plastic. And for that reason, that can't go in. And there were several other items that I was just amazed that I was putting in that really I shouldn't be putting in. And I think people need to be more informed for in order for this to happen properly, to get a proper result.
Derry O'Donnell explains why it's so important.
There's a lot of confusion around what actually goes into the recycling bin. So it's essentially rigid plastics, tin cans, aluminium, paper and cardboard. If it's kind of crunchy, kind of squeezable plastic, if you like, you know, like cling film, crisp packets, that kind of thing, that's not recyclable. You know, that only contaminates the bins, you know. And recently China have said that they're not going to take any more plastic waste from Europe, you know. So, like, that'll, you know, what are we going to do with the plastic? And the main reason for that was because a lot of it was going over contaminated. People are throwing dirty nappies and food waste and other things into the recycling bins. And, you know, it's a simple change, you know. I mean, right now, you know, we you know, people are paying for their bin collection or whatever. But if it's not segregated properly, you know, there's going to be charges for that, basically, you know. So people should really and truly start making the change now, making the effort to properly segregate the waste. And one, I suppose, basically, if it's clean, dry and loose, so don't put your all your recycling stuff into a plastic bag and then dump the plastic bag into the recycling bin, because it's not loose and the machines that separate all this stuff can't deal with that. So it can often end up then going into incineration or landfill, you know. So it's important to keep it loose, dry and clean. There is also, there was a recycling ambassador program launched. So there will be people available to give talks and workshops on proper waste segregation, and just, you know, go out and educate the community. I can deliver such talks myself as well, or workshops on waste reduction and that as well. So if anybody wants to get in touch, they can just contact Zero Waste Cashel, or visit our website as well, zerowastecashel.ie.
How will it benefit people in the future if they do decide to reduce their waste?
Well, of course, it'll benefit people in their pockets, number one, anyhow. If they reduce the amount of waste that they have, it'll reduce the cost of disposing of rubbish. And, you know, people might protest and give out like that they're going to have to pay more, but it's a step people can easily take to reduce the amount of waste that they have. For example, putting food waste into the residual waste bin, you know, that's like food is heavy, you know. It's generally kind of wet and soggy as well by the time it starts to rot and decompose, so that's going to weigh heavier in your bin. And if you just make a simple change of keeping food waste separate, you know, and putting organic waste, basically anything that can rot, and you can either compost it yourself at home and use it for you know, your own garden, or, you know, if you're growing your own vegetables or growing your own plants or whatever, you know, you can have the compost there yourself. We'll also be looking at setting up a master composting demo site here in Cashel, and that will so we'll be training a few people up in how to help others compost. So they'll be able to teach their neighbours, you know, this is the best way to compost any material like that.
Change is inevitable. However, it's difficult to get the message across to the public. It seems that bin companies aren't clarifying what can go in the recycling bins. Supermarkets seem to be increasing their use of packaging, and online shopping is contributing to the problem as well. Repack has found that more than 7,000 tonnes of waste a year is being generated by shopping online. Are you actively trying to reduce the amount of waste you have?
Well, I do try to reduce it, yeah, as best I can, like. But it's not easy, I suppose. It's not easy, do you know, to get rid of it.
Well, I think everybody is really trying to reduce, but Whilst the shops keep wrapping and double packing and everything else, that is nigh impossible for us as consumers, because you buy an item and you take maybe two or three different wrappings off it. So I find that one, that until the manufacturers find a way of changing how they produce their foods and everything else, we're going to have a problem there.
I haven't thought about it, no, because I'm paying at the right level of money now. It doesn't go up or down. But if I had to pay by weight, I definitely would be reducing it, you know. I would even think about going to other places, you know, to drop it off. It could be cheaper for me.
Yes, I suppose we are, yeah, because we have bins at the moment and we are trying to recycle and use the compost bin as much as we can to get the weight down, because we don't want to pay for the extra charge to dump the black bag, shall we say.
I think we all should be trying to reduce our waste for our own sake, because it is going to be charged. I personally live alone, so my waste is not massive. I am thinking of just taking control of my own waste and bringing it to a recycling plant, we'll say once a fortnight for my rubbish, and recycling probably once a month. But I do think, for our own sakes, and for nature, for Mother Nature, we all need to be aware.
That's Tip FM's Amy Ryan out and about for us on the subject of recycling. 1800 938 007. You'll be speaking to Trudy, who's producing today, or you can text on 083 311 3311. Of course, at any time of the day or the night, you can make contact with us on tipfm.com.